Hey, 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 closet busters and bold move makers. It is time once again for Life Uncloset. So I want you to gather around because it is time once again to kick down those closet doors of your life. We're here to escape our BS, explore our fears, and elevate our self-expression. I'm your host, Rick Clemons. I'm the bold move expert and that coming out guy who's going to take you to the party, the pulpit, the wake, and back to the party of living your life uncloset. So come on along with me and grab hold of yourself and get ready to step out, step up, and step into facing your fears, making your bold moves, and living life without apologies. Now let's get to the show. Hey, 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 Life Uncloseted family. Here we are, another episode. Thanks for joining us. My name is Rick Clemons. I'm the host, as you know that. But just because we think we know everything doesn't mean something isn't still valid or doesn't need to be discussed. In fact, I'm about to slap the next person who comes up to me and says, why do we have to talk about DEI? That is dead. Or why do we have to talk about trans inclusion? Well, you kind of have to be an idiot at this point, especially on the second one, to say, why do we need to talk about trans inclusion and all these different things? Because it's headline news. It's showing up everywhere we look. And I don't want to like put the fear in everybody, but we need to have these conversations because they're important. And my guest today is actually a leading expert in inclusivity and workplace culture. They have an amazing business called Revel Impact. They've been featured in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, Business Review, many, many places. And they have a MA from Columbia University. And their focus is really on like, how do we keep having these conversations? And there's a little twist on it I will get into during the conversation today. But everything from trans inclusion, DEI, how to de-escalate conversations. And I'm going to leave the other little piece of the puzzle to it because there's something that's showing up more and more in our community that's always been there, but I feel like we need to talk about that conversation as well. So without further ado, I want to welcome my guest, Nate Shalev, to the podcast. And thank you, Nate, for being here. So appreciate you.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here chatting about this. I think it's important.
It is important. And, you know, as someone that uses the pronouns they, them, let's kind of get that front and center, even though I know my audience has heard this, but I always like to hear, you know, why that's important to you, where that came to you, because it's part of this whole overall conversation. We cannot have any discussion these days about LGBTQ plus and diversity, equity, and inclusion without realizing. And then we have this other whole part of our community. So kind of give us your take on your version of you being they, them, and where you feel like you fit in everything.
Sure. Well, so just in general, right? Pronouns are just part of, they're part of all languages, but in English, they're how we refer to people or objects, right? So like, this is our conversation. These are my headphones. That's her pencil, right? It's just how we refer to things. And so in English, they are gendered. So which means that pronouns offer an opportunity for us to just be respectful of one another. And because they're gendered, we can, it's a way to affirm someone's identity. And so at its core, that's it. Everyone has pronouns, no matter who you are. You have a way that people refer to you that just make you feel good, right? If you use pronouns he and somebody calls you she, it just doesn't feel right. And so I started to use they, them pronouns. It was a lot of LGBTQ inclusion, right? You don't know exactly what you need until you actually meet somebody who is doing it, right? We don't have a lot of these models, especially for a kind of positive LGBTQ role models. There are more now. I started using the pronouns in 2013. I was at an LGBTQ summer camp. It was an adult summer camp. It was phenomenal and amazing. But one of the things that happened there was that I met somebody who used they, them pronouns. This was somebody that I admired. It was somebody who described their gender in similar ways to mine. At the time, I was really looking for ways to understand myself and my gender and kind of my identity overall. And so I was just in like a trial and error kind of mode. And so I met this person that made sense to me. And so after I got back from this camp, I started to use the other pronouns. I just tried them out and they just fit. It just felt like me. When somebody referred to me in they, them, I just felt like they were actually talking about me in a way that felt right. And so I've been using them ever since. And that's really it. I think sometimes we think LGBTQ identities are very complicated, but more often than not, this is how it happens. We have experiences that bring a new understanding for who we are, and then we try to find the right words and language to talk about those experiences. And then when a label doesn't feel right, we make up a new one, right? We
Right.
keep trying things to try to capture the very often complex human experiences that we're having. And so
Well, but that's
that's
it.
how kind of my journey toward them.
It is that complex human experience. I mean, if we quote, I'm going to say this just to annoy some people. If we go back in time before the they them existed, I mean, come on. I mean, this has been going on in some form since the human existence. I mean, it's kind of like saying, well, before gay came along. Gay never came along, folks. And I'm not going to have that argument with anybody anymore. I'm just like, I'm so done with that conversation. Like, yeah, you go believe your thing, and let me just go do my thing. But that's the thing. It's the human experience. And even that, what I just said is you go have your human experience the way you want, but that doesn't give you the right to put your human experience into mine. And again, I think it does just come down to respect. And I have some people in my world who they really struggle with this. Oh, well, God didn't make a mistake. I'm like, no, he didn't. And that's why they are just fine the way they are. They are just fine the way. And when I say that, they just like, but I said, oh, so you're saying they're a mistake. They're not saying they're a mistake. They know exactly who they are. Now, it may have taken you some time to find your space. It took me 36 years to find myself and say, hey, okay, yeah, even though I knew all along. And I think this is at the crux of like why these conversations are important and why inclusion in any way, shape, or form needs to continue to be addressed. So, the expert in all of this, what is some of the toughest challenges you see when you're starting to look at the corporate space, the workplace, about wrapping people's heads around this? And I'm going to say, I don't think you're trying to, quote, change a belief. You're just trying to help them embrace and understand, would be my guess, for the most
I
part.
mean, my what I say that my goal is always to create workplaces where businesses and people thrive. I'm not like the first person to say this, but our businesses are made up of people. And so when your people are happy, like your business is also going to be happy. And so when we talk about the EI, you could call it EI, you can call it inclusion, you can call it anything you want, but at its core, it is just good business because when you care about your people, that's really how you're going to see everything else thrive. You're going to be more collaborative, you're going to be more innovative, you're going to have, less turnover, you're going to be attracting top talent. There's some stat now that it's a little bit outdated now, but the last one showed that 1 in 5 Gen Zers are LGBTQ. And so they're looking for workplaces that are inclusive because they want to be able to show up to work and be they are the same way that we all do. So that's kind of at its core what we're talking about, what our focus is. In terms of changing minds, it's not a realistic goal to change anyone's mind. And so the best that I focus on is understanding where folks are, being able to have a conversation to create a space where folks can ask questions they're afraid to ask elsewhere, get the understanding that they don't have, so we can make some progress. I think folks can feel, even very well-meaning folks or folks who have a solid foundation, can feel very unsure because they don't feel like they have the right knowledge, that they know enough, that they know the exact right next thing to do, and so they just don't do anything. And I think really being able to encourage folks to start somewhere, start anywhere, be proactive, not to wait for your first trans employee because then it's going to be too late most of the time because a bunch of harm has already happened. So to be proactive and start these things wherever you can, even if you can't do every single thing you want to do, being able to have the first training, to have the first conversation, something like, talking about pronouns, right? Starting somewhere, I think is always important and can take a lot for folks to really internalize and be comfortable with.
Well, and it is something for people to like internalize and become comfortable with, which is a big ask. I have never asked people on my team and my role as, I'm a leader in the company that I work for. And I've never said, you have to do this. But I've given enough of myself in ways where they've come to the place because I have some, I've had some team members that, me being a gay man, has been a real test of their own personal values and how they show up. And at times they're still not sure. And we attract a lot of LGBTQ people into the work that I do. And sometimes it can be a little bit of a quote tripping hazard for them, right? But here's what I know. by me just being me and being present, it has taken that and it's truly flattened it out so much. True, if they have questions, they come to me. Or if they're like, I just want you to work with this person, I always know. And I had some really candid conversations just recently about, let's have a conversation about this. And that's where, you know, a few individuals said, you know, I can't wrap my head around it. I said, that's okay. I'm a gay man. And it took me a while to wrap my head around it too, until I gave myself the room to go, wait, how is this any different than someone with a disability? How is this any different than someone who's from a completely different culture? And as soon as I started thinking through that lens, Nate, I realized this is simple, actually. Yes, visually is where it fucks our brains up. I'm just going to be honest. For many people, they're like, wait, this is what I see. I'm like, that's okay, but let me tell you a story. And I always tell a story about a transgender friend of mine who, when we spoke together on PFLAG panels, used the story of, I used to look in the mirror and I was a man. Yep, I manifested as a man. But every time I looked in the mirror, all I saw was this beautiful woman. All I saw was this. And it's really a moving story when, you know, for those who will take it in, those who won't, I'm not even going to throw you a life raft. Good luck. Go be you. But don't you think that so much of this has become probably where they were? And I can't even think how long ago, because I was in the workforce when this became part of the challenge. It's kind of like where we went with Americans with Disabilities Act. Man, people fought like having to have the wheelchair access and all these things. And now you would not pretty much find that anywhere. You know, it's just, this is what it is. So it's probably just, we're on a trajectory, but it's taking, I think, and you can, you know, weigh in on this, it feels like it's taking a little bit longer in this space to get people to really grasp hold.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I don't know if it's taken longer, or if that right now it's being, and in the past it's being intentionally leveraged for causes that have nothing to do with being trans. So yeah. A group of people have decided that the way that they are going to gain power and authority is by creating an us versus them. And right now the them is trans folks. And so you're able to, trans folks are, I don't know, it's something like less than 1% of the population, or I don't exactly know. There's no good numbers, because it's really hard to track exactly how many trans folks there are. So whatever number I just gave is probably not quite right. But whatever it is, right, it's a very small population. And so you're able to create this box and say, these are the bad folks, we're the good folks, we're going to create this us versus them mentality. And so I think it's very intentional right now. Most of the time, it really has nothing to do with trans folks, and really has everything to do with galvanizing a base, able to gain power. And so that's what I think it is, not necessarily that it's...
Which is, it's kind of interesting to watch this happening. And I get it. I mean, most of the audience knows this part of my world, but I mean, I came out at 19 and went back in the closet until I was 36. And I have to say, the galvanization, because that was right at the beginnings of the AIDS epidemic, is part of what, you know, now I can look back and go, oh, wait, that is probably logically why I was like, ooh, I was scared to death. Didn't help that my dad's oldest brother, who was gay, was one of the first to die from HIV and AIDS. But it was such a just galvanized world around that subject that you couldn't really get anything done around, quote, gay rights, because it, you know, it was the early 80s. And I almost feel like here we are almost, you know, 30, 40, some years later, and we're kind of in that same energy, and we're just waiting for people to realize, you want to do this power play, but I don't know that you're going to win. I just don't know that you're going to win, because every day, and that stat that you just said about, you know, Gen Zers 1 in 5, it doesn't surprise me, but actually, I think that stat is probably pretty accurate, regardless of what generation. I'm a boomer, and I remember how shocked I was, Nate, when I came out and finally was out and was went not to the first gay bar I ever went to, but went to a gay bar with my best friend, and he was introducing me to friends in Laguna Beach. And I would say that first night that I was really like, okay, I feel like I'm finally in my community, he probably introduced me to no less than 10 other gay men who were just like me, who'd been married, had kids. And of course, mm-hmm. I thought I was the princess of the world. Oh no, nobody else is like me, right? And I think this is an interesting space where we are, is this power play, which to me is exactly what it is. It's a power play. And it's, as you said, it's just this galvanizing way to stir up stuff. There's nothing in this that is about trans whatsoever. Not a bit. And it always blows my mind when people make such a freaking big deal about bathroom laws. I'm like, how many restaurants do, and I realize it's a little bit different, but how many restaurants do you go into where there's one restroom and everybody uses the same bathroom, folks? Everybody uses the same bathroom. Now, I realize you go in by yourself, but it's almost like, are you really thinking through what you're saying here? It's like, oh my goodness. And then why would you want someone who is trans, who has done the work and done everything they need to be fully authentically themselves, to then say, oh, well, you transitioned to a woman, but you still need to go back and go to the bathroom. I just don't know why they don't think through these things. It makes no freaking sense whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, it's using trans folks as almost as an excuse for other things, right? Because when we're thinking about people's fear of bathrooms, in women's bathrooms, they're worried about male violence in women's bathrooms, like men yep. being violent in a woman's restroom, yep. men harassing women. They're not worried about trans folks. And so that's really the problem. So if we want to talk about safety in a bathroom, sure, but let's talk about what you're actually worried about, which is mm-hmm. harassment or danger or any of that. And like, trans folks are, I don't want to say never, but typically not the ones doing that. Or the same thing when we're talking about trans inclusion in sports. Right. Often, if you want to talk about fairness in sports, we can talk about fairness in sports, but holistically, right? Like, some folks are just naturally taller. You know, Michael right. Phelps has webbed feet, right? Sports right. themselves are inherently unfair, but when we specifically are only focusing on trans folks, we're using these other things as almost as a vehicle for bias. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what happens more often than not with all of these different laws that we're seeing now.
Right. And I always laugh about the sports thing. I'm like, okay, so you're going to do this because somebody's trans. Maybe we need to start testing everybody deeply about what they're putting in their body and what drugs they're doing to enhance their performance, because that actually puts them at an advantage too, folks. So shut up. You know, it's kind of ridiculous. But there is a piece of this, and this is a weird one, and you may have ran into something like this, where people try to take any of these things and say it's an illness, it's a defect, da 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 da. And the last time I heard somebody talk about it, it really pissed me off, because I have a couple of people in my world who are in this space. They said, well, you know, it's like somebody who is autistic, you know, it's just another thing that they're trying to make something out of. I turned to that person, I said, okay, can you explain what you just said here? Because to me, autism is actually something chemically that is happening for that person. And I want to understand how you're trying to tie these two things together. Because I said, there are people who are autistic and gay and lesbian and trans and all that stuff. And I said, you just kind of tried to say something that isn't making sense to me. They didn't get it. They didn't get it whatsoever. I'm like, you're actually leveraging two different things together to try to say, oh, it's like, I'm like, how would you feel if I said, oh, well, cancer is the thing that causes people to do X. Cancer is the reason. You're putting something on us that isn't true. It isn't like, oh, this is the cause of why you're gay or trans or whatever. And I was like really shocked. And I know autism is something that you speak to as well. And I have to be honest, this has shown up in my world more frequently, I would say, in the last year, where I've had people who have been on the podcast or been on the podcast, and afterward they talk about that they're on the spectrum or they're autistic or something. So how did this become part of your world too? Because A, it's part of DEI as well. I'm going to just say, this is, you know, somebody on the spectrum is as much need to be included in the equity, inclusion, diversity that talk as anything. But where did that come into your world?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's so much of what you just said, but I think the first thing that this, I don't know what this person meant by it,
Oh,
but
it
there's
was
a
weird.
few. Yeah, I mean, but
I'm
there's
really
one.
shaking
There's
my head on that one still, like.
yeah. I mean, it's if it's like a nature versus nurture thing, I would ask what does it matter, right? There are some studies
Right.
that show trans brains are also different, and there might be something biological. Obviously, more studies need to be done. But my main question would be like, why does it matter to you if it's not biological? Like, if there's not something in nature that is causing this, then are you going to say this person doesn't deserve rights or doesn't deserve to be whoever they are? It's like it's a wild premise in a way that when you take it to its logical end, it like doesn't quite matter if you want to just, be a human to another person. So that's
Right.
one thing. The second thing, which I don't think this person knew, obviously, but there are actually more folks who are like LGBTQ and neurodivergent when compared to the general population. And so particularly gender diverse folks, some folks say that it's because like our brains are just functioning differently, and so we're more likely to be more open to exploring different kind of ways of being. Some folks say that like autistic folks are already questioning social norms or not quite, kind of internalizing them in the same way others do. And so that's why we're like more open to exploring this. So there, it's interesting. I don't think they understood that, but it's kind of a very natural intersection because there's so many folks who do hold both things at the same time, like myself. So I'm autistic and trans, and so that's how I came to this work about talking about them both. Both because of the kind of high amount of overlapping. So when you're talking about LGBTQ inclusion, you have to talk about disability inclusion and neurodiversity and neuro inclusion because there's so much. So let's say I'm walking into a pride space. It's a party. It's in my workplace. There's a drag show, which is often right, the drag bingo at your workplace. And everything is great for being trans, right? They are there's a my name tag's got my pronouns on it. I was able to, enter without a legal ID. Like all of these things were really, there was no gender, kind of gender dress codes. Everything was great. But I walk in and there are flashing lights and the music is blaring. And kind of it's really the social expectations are really unclear. I'm not going to be able to be in that space because it
Right.
wasn't set up to support me as an autistic person, even though it was set up to support me as a trans person. And so when we're thinking about both of these things, we have to be thinking about both. Otherwise, we actually aren't going to be able to do inclusion right. And that's kind of true for when we're thinking about the intersections of all of our identities in general.
And it's such a fascinating space to me because some people would like to go explain that off. Oh, well, that's why they're trans, or that's why they're gay. And I'm like, then what does that say about someone who's, neurodivergent and heterosexual then? You're
I mean,
again, you're
sure.
tying two things together that it's just another piece of the puzzle. And last time I had a conversation with someone that was willing to like, okay, let's understand this. I said, just because I'm gay doesn't mean I'm less of a man, even though some people would say that.
Right.
It doesn't mean I'm not a father. I am. Doesn't mean I'm not a podcaster. Doesn't mean I'm not, there's so many things. It's just another piece of the puzzle. And being neurodivergent is just another piece of the puzzle. And it's like having cancer. It's just another piece of the puzzle. You're a cancer survivor. I'm a two-time stroke survivor. It's just another piece of my puzzle of my human experience. And I wish, and I think this is where the DEI conversation can get really interesting. Yes, it would be nice if DEI was, quote, dead. I agree 100%. But that would mean, as a human society, we just accept people for who they are. We just accept. It's that simple. But when that acceptance, and I'm going to go down where I believe most of this comes from, two places, power and religion. When religion dictates that in order for you to be more powerful and be saved by God and all these things, which is what I was told, you have to do this or you don't, then that's all about you on your agenda. It has nothing to do with who I am as a person. But that's saying I'm better than thou. So this is why this is such a thing. And we can see this right now. I mean, a majority of what's happening towards the trans world is all about religion. It's all being driven by the and power. I'm going to say, they kind of hold hands. But it just is almost to the point of beyond frustrating. Like, DEI could be dead, folks, But all you got to do is treat each other like a human. It's that simple. That simple.
Yeah, and acknowledge where we're different, acknowledge how we have different resources, acknowledge,
yeah.
you know, being able to understand what supports folks need, what imbalances need to be corrected. That's interesting. I mean, that's thinking about almost switching it, right, when folks are talking about this. I also think the other piece of this is just a misunderstanding of what DI is, why it exists, that a lot of folks, I think about it as not being like merit-based. I hear a lot of folks talk about as well, thinking about that folks are that it's solely identity-based, and that narrative always feels very it just feels like a fundamental misunderstanding of what exactly is trying to be addressed.
So as you're addressing this, and this is probably kind of a silly question, but not really, like, what kind of organizations do you find most willing to have the conversation, and which ones are really struggling?
Yeah, I would say there are no silly questions at all. It's kind of how I always set up my workshops, that this is always a place to ask those questions, no matter what. And if there are, like, when I do my workshops, there are no offensive questions, I will like talk about why a question would be offensive, and then I'm answering it anyway. So I think that the organizations that I really enjoy working with, it doesn't matter if they're big or small or what industry specifically it is, it's really the organizations who are saying, we know this is important, we understand why it's important, we get that it's going to impact every single aspect of our business, and we want to do it better. And being able to acknowledge both of those things always feels really pivotal for me. So it's saying, we already know it's important, we don't need to be convinced, and what do we do now? And so those are really the organizations that I see have the most success, the ones that are willing to look at how they're doing things, what needs to be changed, and then kind of what they need to do.
But I love what you just said. It's like they're saying, we don't need to be convinced. They're right. Already open. And so they're like, show us the way. Give us the guidance. Tell us, I hate saying tell us, but like, you know, it's literally like, tell us how we can do this better, or what, you know, give us some parameters to work within. And I find organizations that don't invite that, they actually probably have a toxic environment on so many fronts.
Exactly.
Because it's just, this is the way it is. This is the way it is. This is the way it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, then they wonder why they're not. I mean, they could be thriving. They could be thriving financially and profitability, and that's all they're thriving in.
Sure.
But there isn't anybody that wants to be there. That's the thing.
Right. Exactly. And then, so you're going to look at your employee turnover. They're not going to be thriving there. So they're going to be maybe they're financially profitable, but at what cost?
Right. And they don't want to listen, like, well, you know what? Maybe the reason your employee turnover is because this is part of the puzzle. It may not be everything, but this is a piece of the puzzle that's causing that. And then, of course, they immediately like turn that off. Like, nope. Yeah. The problem isn't that. It's just so interesting. I was at Nordstrom Rack, I don't know, a couple of days ago, and it was very obvious to me that the person who was assisting me was somewhere in the gender nonconforming space, presented, there were masculine features, but there was also a side that, like, hey, long dyed red hair. Yet I just felt they were very androgynous. And as I walked out, the people right in front of me were walking, and like, I almost wanted to say something. I'm like, I don't have time to get into this today. But they said, I just don't understand this thinking you're a woman when you're a man. I mean, did you see that guy? And I was just like, oh, I just really, really want to say something, but I was late to where I was going. I'm like, I just was like, okay, what could I say? And I thought, you know what? I don't have to say much. And so as I walked past them, I said, I actually thought it was pretty cool that person is just being who they are, and that they're just reflecting to the world their truth. And I just kept on walking. And I'm sure they were like throwing daggers at me, and I'm like, I don't really care. Because to me, that was the simplest way for me, you know, to in some way not escalate and de-escalate what I want to say without getting drug in. But I know one of the specialties you have, and probably work with organizations and individuals a lot, is how do you de-escalate? And I know that's a big question, Nate. So we could do that for a whole half day probably. But like, when you're in those situations where you can tell it's the escalation, what's one of the best ways to start the de-escalation in a conversation?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's we were talking about like changing people's minds before, and that comes really into play for these moments, because in these moments you're not trying to change someone's heart or mind. You're really focusing solely on safety and solely on being able to intervene in whatever situation is happening. And so one of the ways that you did was directly intervening, saying something, focusing on the comment that somebody said, focusing on rather like the comment rather than the person. You didn't say you were just being transphobic, because that would have escalated, saying something like, I thought that this was really cool, or I think, right? Being able to focus on the comment that was said, the action that happened, and not anything about the person's characters is something that is like a best practice around de-escalation. But safety is always the priority. And so really the first thing is for before you intervene in anything, understanding your own sense of safety. Is it safe for me to say something? What is my, and everyone has a different understanding of safety for them based on their own intersectional identity. So whatever safety means for you is the first and foremost for you to decide what to do next. No matter where you are on that kind of safety understanding, you can always do something, which means if you don't feel comfortable enough to directly intervene, another one is to distract them in some way. So it could be asking somebody for directions, asking really truly anything at all. Didn't we go to high school together? Dropping a pen on the floor. Any kind of distraction can be helpful. But if there's still a feeling of not feeling safe enough to do anything, you can document it. You can record it. You can, kind of write something down that you're hearing. You can, there are so many different ways that we can navigate a situation, no matter kind of where we're feeling, if we're not feeling safe enough to intervene directly. And so that th those are the key things that I would say for folks when we're thinking about de-escalation. Is this safe for me? And then what am I going to do next? And then focusing not on changing hearts or minds, but on if there's a target, right? Making sure that target is going to be okay, and doing whatever you need to do in that moment to make sure that happens.
Well, I'm never too concerned about my own safety because I'm 6 foot 4, 300 pounds. So, like, however, I say that kind of flippantly. There are certain states that I probably wouldn't be as open because
Sure.
in an open carry state,
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I don't
Yeah.
know. My parents happen to live in Idaho, and when we do go visit, I'm very careful how my husband and I present. Not like we're hiding anything, but I'm probably not going to be as open about, hey, honey, or anything like that. It's going to be, and it's sad that you have to feel that way. And I'm not trying to paint all Idahoans as a bad thing. Okay.
Sure.
I don't even want to get into the whole gun thing, but I'm an anti-gun person. I don't get it. I never will. And I do feel that way at times, like, okay, that's like there's certain states I won't even visit at this point because I feel like my rights are just so on the line that, if something happens to me, even though I am legally married to my husband, you never know these days. Like they
Yeah.
could say, nope, whatever. And I know you're married and you probably feel the same way. And I already lived through that time. I already went through that, when we had to be domestic partners and you had to carry something to prove, that you were, related in a relationship. I'm done with those days. I'm done. I don't want to do that. I mean, and some would say, well, then what's a marriage license? I'm like, yes, but if you say it's your husband, they should just like assume, okay, good, right? And I guess that's where all of this kind of comes together from whether you are looking at trans inclusion, you're looking at the challenges of being autistic or on the spectrum, or whatever it might be. DEI is not dead. It hasn't even, in my mind, it's just been hatched because we are just starting to really delve into the depths of what this really looks like. So.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about an approach. We're talking about the way that we can understand and navigate the world. And so it can never be dead because it was never like a living entity. It was never something
Right.
that can be killed. It's really just how we think about the world. I mean,
Right.
how everyone thinks about the world, and being able to see this kind of through the
Right.
lens, and how we want to solve the challenges that we're faced
I was trying to wait, think of a flippant, sarcastic way to say
with.
DEI is just an embryo. It's not a living, breathing thing yet, folks.
Oh,
So
jeez.
leave it the fuck alone, okay?
Another, yeah, I
And
mean, if only.
yeah, exactly. So what are you most proud of in the work you're doing these days?
I mean, I'm proud that I get to do this work at all, to be honest. I'm proud that like pr Pride itself is coming up, and Pride is always a really, it's my busiest time of year, and it's always something that I'm really grateful for, to be able to come into organizations, provide the space, talk about LGBTQ inclusion. It's been one of the most surprising things that I come in thinking I'm going to specifically focus on workplace inclusion, and then I get parents of trans kids asking me specific questions about their kids, or somebody, grandparents asking these questions, or somebody bringing in something that they just heard the other day. And so being able to work through these things with folks and understanding that this is a part of, yes, it's our workplaces, but our workplaces are microcosms of our larger communities and societies. And so being able to utilize this time to create better communities overall for us always feels like something to be proud of, but also specifically thinking about Pride itself. I think it's one of the most beautiful aspects of it.
I think you and I both would love that if our work didn't escalate around certain times of the year, Pride and
Sure.
National Coming Out Day and everything, but that just says there's still work to do. And I've always maintained from the time I started doing this work, Nate, that the day I never have to coach another person out of the closet, it will be the happiest day of my life, and I will gladly shutter my doors. I will just gladly move on. So,
Coach
well, Nate,
yourself out of that specific aspect of your job.
exactly. I really would love to. I would love to. So, well, Nate, thank you for sharing of yourself and being a beacon in the world of, really what DEI is all about and all those things, trans inclusion, de-escalation, anti, the autism thing is just, it's become something really special to me because I have a couple of, like I said, I have a couple of people in my world that have come to that realization, and we see them now in different ways. And they're just friends of mine. One happens to be somebody who is a gay man. And I remember when he came to me, he was a client of mine years ago. And he came to me and he said, "I have something else I need to share with you." I'm like, "Okay, I've been through the coming out and everything." I'm like, "Oh, he's getting married, right? Or, he's got a man finally," or whatever it is. And he said, "One of the things that you always taught me, Rick, was keep being curious. Keep being curious. Because whatever you're not being curious about is where the confusion and the conflict lies." So I finally got really curious about something that was going on for me. I said, "Well, cool. You want to talk about it?" He goes, "Not really, but I want to tell you the outcome." I'm like, "Awesome." Because I've really struggled all along to like be able to meet guys, right? And I'm like, "Yep, we did this. I was your kind of dating coach, everything." He goes, "I realize now because you told me to get curious that I took the steps to go figure myself out." And he goes, "I'm autistic. And now that I understand that and I can see myself better," he goes, "I know how to do this dating thing better because of that." And that was one of those moments I was like, "Okay, whoa." I mean, I had a li very little part in that, but it was that curiosity piece that kept him going and kept him looking. So I love that you're inspiring people to be curious and to move forward and keep going and uncovering. And you're also inspiring people to have the courage to say, "Yeah, we as a company, this is what we need to do," and to consistently show up in that space. So thank you for bringing that into the world. I think we could say happy Pride. It's April, but we could say happy
Why
Pride.
not?
We're
We'll
not
take it.
that, we'll take it. We're not that far away. We're only
No
6 weeks
reason not
away to
to.
official, but and if anybody wants to reach out to you, what's your best ways? Oh, wait, we forgot to talk about it. You have a round table too that
I
you do
do,
on a regular
yeah.
basis.
So LinkedIn is always the best place. I post a lot on LinkedIn. It's where I'm creating spaces for these conversations. So
Awesome.
that's the easiest place to find me, and that's also where you can find information about the roundtables. So I do inclusion roundtables. I would say monthly. They're like more or less kind of just when I want to have them, I have them. But they're on like specific topics typically. So how like tools to have difficult conversations, or
Nice.
specifically around when there was a bunch of, these anti-trans bills are happening all the time, but how do you support folks in not trans friendly states? What does that look like, right? Specific things around that. So they're just open spaces for folks to come chat, talk through, get tools,
Nice.
resources, things like that. Meet folks who are doing similar work.
That's very cool. Well, thank you for doing the work that you do. And if anybody wants to get in touch, we'll have a LinkedIn connection, all that stuff on the show page. And everybody just kind of work towards realizing it's just about having simple conversations. They may not be easy, they may be difficult, but if you start from the perspective of it's a simple conversation, we're just gonna have it. I'm just gonna, all of this.
Yep.
It can be pretty powerful. So thank you again, Nate, for a wonderful conversation. And everybody, go out, keep being yourselves, and don't let the excuses and fears keep you from being unapologetically who you are in the world. Hey, 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 Life Uncloseted family. Another episode of Life Uncloseted has come to an end, and it is time for all of us to sashay away and go face our fears, make those bold moves, and stand up to living our life without apology. But before you do, I've got a favor to ask of you. Would you hop over to iTunes or Spotify or Podbean or wherever it is that you're listening to this and just give us a little bit of love if you like what we're doing here at Life Uncloseted? Here's what it does. It helps other people find the show. It helps other people get to know what we're all about. And you just might help change life. In fact, if you really want to change a life, we'd love it if you just ask a friend to take a listen and see what they think. So that's it. Love you all deeply. I'm Rick Clemons, the host of Life Uncloseted. And never stop stepping out, stepping up, and stepping in to living your life uncloseted.